When I was in Yeshivas Beis Yisrael, when I was, I think it was my third, it might have been my fourth year, I don't remember exactly when it was, there was a guy there who was an absolute unbelievable guy. I can't fully describe him to you. I wish I could. The guy was an unbelievable person, and to this day, I've never seen a person like him. The guy spent at least a half an hour in every Shimon Esrei. And when I say half an hour, I don't mean that he was faking it and whatever it was. This is a guy who came from a very modern background. Very modern background. I should say very, very. Whatever. But he did his own thing, and he came to base, and he really shouldn't have gone to base. He probably should have gone to a different yeshiva, and he was kicked out. But he got back in, and he, through an intervention of a different Rebbe, somebody outside of the yeshiva that helped him out a lot, the guy flipped like you've never seen before in your life. Literally, half-hour Shmona Esrei. And they were legit. I was sitting right next to him. I sat in the back. He was two seats away from me. I used to watch him every single day daven. And I'm telling you right now, I've never seen anybody like him. He would literally concentrate on every word. Brachos. You've never seen a person take a bracha before. He would spend 25 seconds, 30 seconds on each bracha, and he meant it. He really meant it. He was doing it. This is not only when people were watching him and when he was around other people. He would go back home, right, to wherever he was, and he would go wherever he was, and he'd do the exact same thing. His Shmona Esrei was an unbelievable Shmona Esrei, whether he died in Bechidus or he thought people weren't watching or he knew people were watching. It was the exact same thing. The brachos that he made when he thought he was by himself in a certain area and he'd be making an Asher Yotzar, you've never seen anything like this. Never seen anything like this. He literally lived between the Beis Medrash and his dorm room. And that's all he did. He spent all of his time going from one place to the other, walking to one to the other. I didn't see him do anything that was questionable. He wouldn't eat out anywhere. He only ate in the yeshiva itself. Other people, I can't describe this guy to you. It was not the normal. Base is not a place where you flip out like that. That's not where you do that. That's not what the place is. But it happened to be this guy did it, and he did it legit. And he's continued. To this day, he's still learning like you can never believe. The man is a tzaddik, an absolute tzaddik. He's been in kol his whole life so far. Doesn't worry about anything. Everything just... I can honestly say I've never seen anybody like him. So he got up on Erev Yom Kippur after Shacharit that we had davened and we just finished davening and I was starting to learn, and he looked at me and he's like, can I ask you something? I was still older than him by a little bit. He said, can I ask you something? And I said, yeah, of course. And he said, what am I going to do Vidui for? Honestly, this is his question. What am I doing Vidui for? So I'm like, the usual, you know, like, you know, did you have his stock list? Did you see anything that you probably shouldn't have seen? He's like, no. I'm telling you, I've seen this guy talk to women. He did not have his stock list. I remember ladies that knew him from around, that knew him from before, not girls, but lady, like older women, who said to me that they're embarrassed to look near him because he would never look anywhere near them. He would look down the whole time. So I said, I don't know, is there, you know, some time where you maybe were davening and you weren't concentrating your davening? And he said, no. And honestly, you could tell the guy meant it. He really meant it. He couldn't think of a time where he hadn't concentrated on his davening. I said, brachos? He's like, no. So I'm like, gaiva? So that I got him. I was able to get him on that one. He had gaiva. I mean, obviously, when it comes to mitos, that's a little bit different. But it really was hard. It was difficult to find something that the guy had done, right, because he was right there. Even that was kind of weak. You know what's sad about this? It's that we have that mindset even though we're nowhere near that level. I'm like, yeah, what's there to do Vidui for, right? I mean, I barely have done anything wrong. See, the HR is unbelievably powerful. Unbelievably powerful. And he's got everything up his sleeves. For example, I remember that there was a sign-up sheet when I was in yeshiva for Shmir Salash, that everybody should be careful about doing Shmir Salash, and everybody took a half an hour, 45, 15 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes. I don't know if you've seen these sheets before, where they have them, but you take 15 minutes, you're not going to speak Lashon Hara during those 15 minutes. So me, being the person that I am, signed up between 2:30 and 3:45 a.m. Because I figured, there's no problem with me speaking Lashon Hara from 2:30 to 3:45 a.m. It's a perfect time for me. So I said 2:30 to 3:45 a.m., no problems whatsoever. And it worked unbelievably perfect. Until one Thursday night, it was only 3 weeks into it, one Thursday night, I'm sitting up, I'm in the base medrash, Thursday nights were late nights, and I was sitting there, and as I was sitting there, I got a phone call from someone in America. It might have been Rabbi Shein, I don't know if it was Rabbi Shein called, it might have been, but I got a phone call, right, and I picked up the phone, and the guy goes, it wasn't Rabbi Shein, because of what we said. He's like, you'll never believe what just happened to X. I said, really? And I was tired, and I was in the middle of learning, and I sat there, and I was like, yeah, so what happened? And he told me. And all of a sudden, I hang up the phone, look at the clock, it's 3:30 a.m. I'm like, someone darn you! How could you have done this to me? It's unbelievable. He is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He doesn't just sit back, let you relax a little bit. He knows. He knows what to do. See, it's even sad because we think we have everything figured out already. We think we've got everything done and that we have our real faith. And we think we're doing good because we're in yeshiva, we're learning a shtickle, and we're able to do whatever we need to do. But the truth is, there's some scary stories about this. I'm going to mention one Chassidus story and then one Lipitz story to knock it out. They're both going to go together. We're going to see. It's a Baal Shem Tov story. Okay? It's a Baal Shem Tov story. It says that there was once a man who came to visit him. And he came to visit him, and the Baal Shem Tov completely and utterly ignored him. Completely. There was nothing. He wouldn't say anything to him. So the Chassid just thought, okay, maybe it's something wrong. He did tshuva, he worked on himself, he did this, that, and the other. And the next time he came to see the Baal Shem Tov, he went to him again. And this time again, the Baal Shem Tov completely ignored him, as if he wasn't there. Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem, completely skipped him over. The guy noticed it, and he said, second time around, this is not stop. Baal Shem Tov is obviously doing this for a reason, so he went to the Baal Shem Tov right before he was about to leave and said, Rebbe, please, give me a birchas preda, give me something. Baal Shem Tov refused to give. He said, Rebbe, what's wrong? What did I do wrong? What are you yelling at me for? What's going on? So the Baal Shem Tov told him, so do you remember what happened, not this past time, the time beforehand, what happened to you on your way to me? And he said, yeah, when I was coming to the town of Mezhebush, when we were coming near, so we came somewhere near the town, and there was a farmer who came out to me and yelled at me and said, oh, you're the censor, you're the tenth man, come join us, we need a minion, you're the tenth man, you can join us for a minion, so somebody has a yortzeit, you'll be it. I said, I really want to get to Mezhebush before Shabbos. If I don't leave now, I don't think I'm going to be able to go. So I said to him, I can't be your tenth man, I can't do it. So the man begged him. He said, I don't know if anybody else is going to come down this road. I don't know if we'll be able to get a minion before nightfall. But I said, I couldn't. I really wanted to get the measures before the night. So I really wanted to go. So the Baal Shem Tov knew that story through his Ruach HaKodesh or whatever it was that he had. And he said to the man, that was your tafkid in life. Your tafkid in life was to make that minion. And you didn't do it. So right now, you're here through the chesed of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Chesed El Kolayom. You have the ability, a Kaddish Baruch Hu can have extra people in the world. You don't necessarily need to be here. Your wife doesn't deserve to have a dead husband, so you're here. You're alive. But for all intents and purposes, your soul is dead. Your soul has nothing else to do in this world. You missed out on that purpose, you're going to have to come back, you're going to have to do something else to do an attack, and then that's it. The guy burst out crying, asked for a tikkun, the Baal Shem Tov couldn't give him a tikkun. Crazy story. But it's a little bit more realistic when you hear it from Visions of Greatness, Part 2, page 219. Gets it a little bit there. This guy, his name was Yonasan Laufer. I don't think that's the real name, but he called him Yonasan Laufer. He was captured in Russia for whatever it was, you know, bad activities, Jewish activities, and was thrown into Siberia. So he wanted rations from the outside. He couldn't live on the rations that they give you in Siberia. So he wanted to go outside to get rations from somewhere else. But to get extra rations was punishable by death. At least a jail sentence. But it could be punishable by death. So he had to do it at night, sneak outside, go outside the camp, be able to meet up with somebody who he knew was going to be able to give him rations. He was able to do that. He was able to meet up with the guy in some way. Covertly, he was able to do it. As he was on his way to go meet this guy, another person comes out of the woodwork and says to him, are you a Jew? And he says, yeah. He said, we need a tenth man for a minion. We need you to be our tenth man for the minion. So the guy said, I can't. I've got to meet this guy right now. He said, please, I beg of you. I'm not going to find another Jew in Siberia who's going to be able to come join me. Please, join me for this minion. There's a yortzeit, it's a mace. Please, come join us. So the guy said, Yonasan said, I can't. I really got to go. He went to the place. He bought a bag of flour. And as he bought it and the money exchanged hands, all of a sudden agents came out of nowhere, KGB or whatever it was at the time, came out of nowhere, arrested the guy for doing this type of business, and threw him in jail. While he was in jail, knowing that his sentence was almost definitely going to be death, he swore to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I swear every time that there's going to be a minion, I'll make sure I'll be the tenth man no matter what. No matter how hard it's going to be, I'll make sure that I'm the tenth man. So either HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to his prayers or something else that he had said, he felt it was because of this, and he survived South America. He came out and he emigrated to America. Okay, he grew up, had a family, everything was all good. And then toward the end of his life, he's an older man already, healthy, everything all good by him. His family had a family simcha. His daughter was supposed to pick up, his daughter was late. When his daughter finally just came to the door to pick him up and bring him to the family simcha, then all of a sudden the phone rang. Picks up the phone, he said, hello. The person says, we need you for a tenth man of minion. He's already known as the man who will be the tenth man for your minion. You need a center, he'll be your tenth man. They all knew him this way. Everybody knew him this way. So they called him up and said, we need you for the minion. He said, I have a family simcha. I'm so sorry. I don't think I can do it. The person said, it's not a problem. We'll find somebody else. Hung up the phone. The next morning, after the family simcha was over, he had a heart attack and he died. That man. His daughter always felt bad. Always felt terrible about this. She knew the story. Everybody knew this story. It's not that there's a connection necessarily. It's not that. It's that there's an idea, and it's something that's simple. That you have no idea what things in life allow you to stay around. You have no clue what little mitzvos or chas v'shalom averos are the ones to be the final hammer blow, the makah b'patish, that makes the final decision for you. The Bucha Shasharov. Anybody heard of the Bucha Shasharov? I didn't decide from this story. Bucha Shasharov was very makbid on yayin nesach. He would not drink wine at all that was anywhere close to being by non-Jews. Nothing that was anywhere close to non-Jews. He was makbid on absolutely everything. Toward the end of his life, he was taking a medicine. He took the medicine, and after he drank it, he said, Oi, yayin nesach. And then he died. They found out that the medicine that he had just taken had a little bit of wine inside it. You don't get these types of stories, right? Those stories are just, they're a little bit beyond us. They're a little bit beyond anything that were there. Let me ask you something. You think that Rosh Hashanah was good. You think that the Aseret Me'etzuvah are just easy. Let's deal with where we're holding right now. Did everyone here say HaMelech HaKadosh both times in their Shmoneh Atzeret, the first time around? Is anybody looking at themselves and thinking like, oh gosh, I have to daven another mincha right now? Because rather, it's okay. It happens to people. But isn't it unbelievable that we can't concentrate on three brachos of Shmoneh Atzeret? Three brachos. How many people here said all four psukim? Azachrenu l'chaim, mi'chamocha, chsov l'chaim, and b'sefer chaim. Did we say all four of them? You don't have to repeat your Shmoneh Atzeret. How about a Melech HaMishpat? There's one that you throw in right in the middle. I was in the middle of spacing out there. You can't throw a Melech HaMishpat there. I was in good space out mode. It's right there. I didn't have to bow. I didn't have to do anything. I earned my spot money. I was happy. And then all of a sudden you're throwing me on Melech HaMishpat. By the time you get to Velirush Shalayim, you're like, oh man, a Melech HaMishpat. That's when you start thinking about it. How many people said them straight all the way through? How many people remember, okay, maybe when it's washing, maybe you remember to bench a little bit better. Maybe you remember to bench. But did everybody hear bench? Did everybody bench? Did everybody make a birchas, an alamichya, or a barina pashos for a breakfast, you might add? A lot of you were drinking something, either coffee or something else that you were drinking during Seder this morning. Did you all make a barina pashos? Did you all make a shahakal? Do you all know the halakos of making a barina pashos on coffee and tea? Do we all know that? When you're allowed to and when you're not allowed to? You know, there's certain things that these are simple things. Forget about the complicated stuff. Did you all have kavanah to be yotzir Kriya Shema this morning? Did you all say Kriya Shema before the proper time? Granted, it was a little bit easy if you came to 7:30 minion, right? But is that there? Out of 2 hours of Seder that you had this morning, from 9:30 or even 9:35 until 11:30, did everybody have 2 hours of learning? Was it an hour and 55 minutes? Or when you get to Shemayim for 120, it's going to be like, you got 16 minutes in there. That's pretty good. 16 minutes. How long was it? What was it exactly? And I know for some people here, that's like, yeah, of course I did. And I did A, B, C, D, and E. I'm sure you can find something here. So what's the problem, right? I mean, the Aseret Me'etzuvah is pretty much a joke. You're basically good. you're definitely better than many other people in this world. Probably 99.99% of the world. Probably you're better than all of those people. And for all intents and purposes, I mean, if there's anybody who's going to get a Lamaba, it looks like it's going to be you. I mean, that would be the easy choice. If we're dealing with people who at least concentrate a little bit on learning, while they don't do anything at all, they don't keep Shabbos, they don't have mitzvos, they don't even know what they're doing, then you'd assume that a Lamaba is going to be given straight to us in just that. What I'm about to say is difficult to say. It's going to be very, very difficult. Because the honest truth is that when you say these types of things, we live in a generation where if you say something harsh to a person and you tell them that they're wrong, they just want to run home and go tell their mommy, I mean. And they just want to cry. They just want to cry. How did you tell me that I did something wrong? I can't believe I am the best person in the world. I have to think that I'm the best person in the world. We live in a generation where everything is blamed on our parents. Everything. No matter what we do in life and all of our decisions, and no one is responsible for their own actions. And although there's no question that our parents are somewhat to blame for everything that happens in our lives, there's no question. No responsibility is taken by us. It's mostly them and sometimes us. Where if one thing goes wrong in your otherwise unbelievable life, with everything good and unreal things, everybody here is a pretty good looking kid, everyone here has great health, give or take, okay? Everybody here is pretty good with almost everything that you have. You can all walk, you can all see, you can all talk, you can all use your arms, you can all use every part of your body. But when one thing goes wrong, it's like, God hates me, I can't believe that I'm in this world. And that's the reaction. The reaction is, I can't believe God did this to me. It's the immediate reaction. Because we're all wimps. When it boils down to it, we are absolutely all wimps. So you go off to Derek, you start hating all your rabbis, you blog with Avi Korson. And then, who knows where that ends up? Where you're dating, who you're dating, and everything like that for the rest of your life. I've met guys who are dating shiksas. Not because they're good looking. Because lahakas, simply put, from kids that have grown up, it's amazing, absolutely amazing. But I'm going to say it, and anybody who has the thought process of, I'm automatically going to Olam Haba because I learn for a couple hours a day, is dead wrong. That cannot be your mindset. And hopefully, the yisurin that you'll have in this world will take away of a lot of that. Hopefully, the yisurin that you have will take away of a lot of the thought process or anything like that. See, it's simple. All you have to do is look at Perek Dalet Mesiras Yesharim. That's all you'd have to read. And just go through it just a little bit. Perek Dalet Mesiras Yesharim, and you'll see what the real point behind a person's life is. And he says it's simple. You think you're better because you're in yeshiva? You think you're better because you're able to sit and learn for a couple hours a day? Says the following, Svivav Nisaram Na'od. Those who are around him, those who are close to the Kadosh Baruch Hu is very stormy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that those people have the worst punishments. The worst, the harshest ones. The Omekadim goes even further, says the Mesiras Yesharim. Goes even further than that. Afilu Sicha Kalabin Ish Leishto. Even the small little talk that's given between a man and a wife is taken and thrown up in the Bezin Shomayot. Even the little bits, everything is judged. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is never Mevatar, says the Mesiras Yesharim. Never Mevatar on anything that a person ever does. There's no such thing as HaKadosh Baruch Hu will overlook that because I learned after that. It's not the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. There is such a thing as Erech Apayim. There is an idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow himself to wait and not judge you immediately so that you have the chance to do tshuva. And it's possible that he'll wait years for you to be able to do tshuva. It's possible he'll wait even decades for that to happen. But there is no such thing as Vitor Hadin. It's never Mevatar. It's there, it's waiting, it's sitting there hanging in the balance. And if you've done something wrong, even if it's something so simple as just you put on tefillin a little bit late in the morning and you say Kriya Shema a little bit late, even that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Mevatar. Lo Yalim Hadayin Eino Me'am Klal is this word. He will not hide his eyes from that whatsoever. See, here's the line, and this is what you have to remember. It's not that everyone's punishment is equal. That's for sure not true. But everyone is equally punished. Everyone is equally punished. There's something that has to happen. You just have to hope for me to surround him, to give you the time to be able to think about it, realize that you did something, and to actually think this was the wrong thing to do. To have karasa, to say vidui, to accept upon yourself in the future that you won't do it for a kabbalah lawsuit. There are steps, and you have to do them. And if you don't do them, they will be punishable. And there will be a time where you're going to say, wow, why did this happen to me? And you're not going to know. But the reason why is because of that. The thing that you thought HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mevater over. And again, should be in this world, not the next world. It doesn't mean you should accept upon yourself or take upon yourself these surahs, but you better hope that it's going to be in this world and not the next world. The line is, Midas Adin Lo Sashuv Rekam. It will not be returned for Rekam. I'm only 34. I've only been in yeshiva for 5 years. But I can tell you right now, from the experience that I've had from guys coming in and coming out, just from the yeshiva, let alone from other places that I've been involved with, just from this, I've had enough people say to me, you feel that you did everything you could, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just throwing it right back in your face. I don't want to hear that. You did not do everything you could. If you can say you did everything you could, if you can say that about yourself, you're a liar. There's no way you did everything you could. Everything you could means literally putting 60 minutes to every hour and 60 seconds to every minute. No one has done that. No one. So you don't feel bad about it, because come on, you need a little bit of batola in order to live. And I agree, it's kind of hard to live our lives without having batola. But you have to realize that this is something wrong. You have to realize there's something wrong with that. And to go through the Aseret Mitzvah and not consider that anything at all, to go into Yom Kippur and say, I had a pretty good year. I did pretty well. There's not much that I have to worry about. Because what's listed on the Al-Khait and the Ashamnus don't necessarily apply to you. Wrong. They 100% apply to you. You have to find the ones that you're most affected by. But there's no question that there is something, if hundreds of things, that everyone here has to cry about. And if you don't have an ability to cry, make yourself cry. Think of yourself dying. Or think of someone you know close to you that dies. Have that consideration in some way, shape, or form. You have to be able to think this way. Because until you put your all into it, until you can say, I could have thought, I did this much for you, until you can honestly say that, and you're willing to say it to his face, there's nothing you can do. Nothing. Absolutely nothing you can do except say to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, I'm sorry. I feel terrible. You know what you can really tell if you've done well? Is Rabbi Scheinfeld coming up to you and telling you, you've done an awesome job this morning. Because if that happens, then you know you're doing really well that morning. Copy that. Copy that type of idea. If that's happening, if Rabbi Friedman, Rabbi Sussman, or myself says to you in the middle of Shir, that's an awesome question. That's the way to ask a question. That's what you're looking for. Those types of ideas, copy that and allow that to be and keep going with it. I don't mean to knock everybody down. That's not my point here. But you should feel knocked down when it comes to Yom Kippur. Our lives are all about making ourselves good and we're better and we'll get better and we'll do. And that's the way it should be. You have to understand. You must. It has to go into your head that this is a scary time. And that Vitur Adin does not happen. I Kaddish Baruch Hu does not give up on judgment. Rachman will push it off a little bit. And hopefully it'll be pushed off for good. Pushed off for good, and we'll be able to do tshuva on it. But consider, if you go into Yom Kippur and you don't have a list of things that you think you have to do tshuva for, you've messed up. You think you're going to get it in the middle of Shemon Esrei after you've davened for the last 7 minutes? You think in the middle of Yashamnus, all of a sudden you're going to be like, and maybe I did this, and maybe I did that? Write it down. Prepare. You have Erev Yom Kippur all of Friday to prepare. Write it down. Put things down that you know you have to do tshuva for. Put things down that you know you've done that's wrong. And then look through the list of the Ashamyans and the Al-Qaeds and go through them. You might not have been over on Gilead Arias. You might not have killed anyone. You probably weren't over on Avodah Zarah. And those, fine, you're done. What about the others? What about all the others, the simple ones? Bad advice given to other people. There's just so many. So many. Think of them. Write them down and consider what can you do to be mevatel, to do some type of vidui. Remember, there's three parts. It's important to say these three. First part is to first understand what you did and have karata. Number two, to actually say them out loud, I did this. And number three, kabbalah la'asid, accept upon yourself that you will not do it again. You have to have those three for it to work. Scary time. We'll be okay. It's a scary time. Write it down. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good day.